Hi, everybody. Welcome to Blockbusting, the podcast where we love to hate movies. I'm your host, Jay Light. Joining me today, the person who I just found out is my neighbor. It's Dana Schwartz.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks.
I feel
for
like neighbor is
out.
A very relative term. We're like two full neighborhoods away in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles, that's close enough, though.
Yeah.
The city's so spread out and sprawling.
We're neighbors. We're a 14-minute drive away.
Yeah. We're a full, almost 15 miles away by highway. But you know what? That's close enough.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to have you on. You got a pretty great body of work. You understand writing. I was intrigued by your pick, because it's a movie that I have a soft spot for from when I was a kid, and rewatching it again yesterday before this brought up some memories again. It's going to be interesting. It's Shrek.
Yeah, it
you
is
hate
Shrek.
Shrek.
Okay, I want to make myself like so clear. It's a movie for children, and so I don't want to be like, oh, I hate Shrek. Like, I just think that Shrek gets celebrated grossly disproportionately to how good it is. I think it's a really like mediocre movie that just happened to hit at the right moment. So it has a large cultural impact. And I also think that it ruined animated movies for a good 15, 20 years. And maybe it's like the damage that it did to the animation landscape still lingers.
Oof.
That's my thesis, and I'm gonna prove it.
A damning indictment. And honestly, yeah. I mean, I was telling Dana before this, I'm a Shrek fan. I do think that there's a lot of, I think the long tail of Shrek, as it were, there's a lot of discourse, and Shrek has become like this weird icon. Like he's been subverted in a lot of ways with like the way that SpongeBob has, where he's become a weird meme. And I'm not a fan of those. I think it's like too weird. But
we can talk about the memification of Shrek. That's a different conversation.
It's a whole different
conversation.
We're here
to talk about the film.
Right. The Academy Award winning, Palme d'Or nominated, first animated feature to ever get nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. Shrek.
I did a joke. I was like, Best Adapted Screenplay. Beauty and the Beast was nominated for Best Picture. Like,
that's
the
true.
Animated film. And Joker won the Palme d'Or, so those mean nothing to me.
I think that here's what I am most intrigued by. Shrek is one of those films that, like, it came out when we were kids.
Yeah.
And obviously viewing animated movies when you're an adult versus when you're a kid, totally different standpoint. So like, what was it like, what's your journey through Shrek been like as you've gone from kid to adult?
Well, I'll say even as an adult, I love animated movies. I watch, you know, every Studio Ghibli. I watch, you know, How to Train Your Dragon. Like I watch new Disney movies. Like I do enjoy, I watched like all those Secret of the Kells and Wolfwalkers. Like there's like an artistic outlier of like a non-mainstream animated release any given year. Like I'm going to watch it and I'm going to probably enjoy it. I just think animation as a medium is really cool. And I feel like people tend to limit it. And Shrek is the problem with animation, but I'll get to that. I grew up, you know, I'm one of four kids. So we watched like a lot of Disney movies and those like white clamshells. And definitely when Shrek came out, it was really exciting and we all loved Shrek and I loved Shrek. And because I was, what year did Shrek come out? I don't have that off the top of my head.
One.
Yeah, because I was 8 years old. So I really liked Shrek when it came out. And now as an adult 20 years later, with a critical lens, I'm like, okay, it's not only not a good movie, but it set up a lot of bad things to come.
Intriguing. This is very interesting. Because like, there's definitely some points that I agree with you on some things. Like, I do think it really set up animated movies, and particularly DreamWorks movies, because it's hard to look at and think about DreamWorks movies compared to the rest of the animated picture landscape at the time and be like, oh, well, yeah, well, this was like, this is about the pinnacle of it probably in the early days. And I haven't seen, I know that you and a lot of other people talk about How to Train Your Dragon as a great all-time.
It's the exception,
like, fantastic. Yeah. I still haven't seen it, so I can't speak to it. But I know that, like, if you mentioned DreamWorks, everybody thinks it's going to be like weird pop culture-y, reference-y bullshit like Shrek is.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I'm like, Shrek is, the jokes of Shrek are either like poop and fart jokes or burp jokes or reference humor. And as a child, when something references something that you know or even recognize as existing in the world, it's exciting to you. But as an adult, you can be like, that's dumb. And that's not a joke. Mm-hmm. Is my, right?
Yeah. I think, well, because that's the kind of like, that to me feels very much like a studio mentality too, where it's like, all right, yeah, if we put in a reference, that counts as a joke. So put references in.
And can I also give you, now it's just becoming a full disjointed rant. Can I also give you my other main problem with Shrek?
Of course.
Is the female character, Fiona, is totally undeveloped. It's one where like the main plot is because of a misunderstanding. Like, you know, just her not being able to admit that she's an ogre to an ogre is insane.
It's totally insane.
He's an ogre. Like, she can be insecure about it, but like, he's an ogre. He's the one person you can tell. She can't, she can tell donkey, but she won't tell the ogre. Wild. But I can even get past that and say the movie itself is wildly inconsistent with its messaging. Because if the movie is like, it doesn't matter what you look like on the outside, it's what's on the inside that counts, and don't make fun of people for how they look. Like, a good 40% of the movie is making fun of Michael Eisner for being short.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. There's so a lot. Like,
it doesn't matter if you're ugly, but fuck you if you're short.
Yeah. Get out of here with your being short.
Yeah.
It's not, don't, nobody likes a short person. This is back when short discourse was also very bad. But I think, I mean, fuck. You hit the nail on the head there.
Because they just want it to be, they're mistaking snark. I think maybe Twitter has, if Twitter didn't exist, maybe I would like go back and rewatch Shrek and be like, this is harmless. But I'm now just fundamentally primed that when people mistake snark for humor or insight, I just like fundamentally shut down. I'm just like, I don't like it.
When was the last time you watched Shrek?
God, you know, and now I was going to watch it last night, and now you've caught me out that I didn't. I would say it's been about a year and a half, early pandemic.
Okay. So it's, I mean, you remember enough stuff. I think.
Yeah.
I agree on, there's so many jokes in here, and I say joke in the loosest possible term, because it's not, because they're not really jokes, they're references, and you go, oh, I know that thing, and that's good enough for, like, a parent who's taking their kid to see Shrek in a movie theater, not expecting to be entertained, really.
Yeah. And I will say to praise Shrek, I think the vocal performances are really great. I think Mike Myers does a really great job. And I think Eddie Murphy's character is funny beyond the script. I think he's just a funny, you know, comedic talent. And so the character of Donkey is better than it might have been otherwise. But like, I will ask you, what do you think is the funniest joke in the comedy movie Shrek?
I mean, that's tough. I was really, one of the things that I was noticing was the sight gags. I think they do a lot of really well-placed sight gags, like in Farquaad's lair for the first time, when he's got the gingerbread man in there, you can see the mama bear head mounted on the wall.
Yeah, that's a good sight gag.
Yeah, and there's like, when they go to the wedding at the very end, when Shrek's trying to interrupt the wedding, and they're like, well, you gotta, how do we figure out when she's gonna say the thing? And then it cuts to inside the wedding, and then the very back, you just see Donkey flying up into the stained glass window and up and back down again. And even after that, when they have the transformation sequence happens, and all the glass windows break except for one, so the dragon punches the other.
Breaks it.
It's all fun. Right,
I'll give it to you. Those are fun gags. There are definitely moments in Shrek, because it's like, it's a extremely watchable movie.
Yes.
It's well done. It's competent. I just think the fundamental moral of it doesn't exist beyond taking snide shots at Disney and fart jokes.
Right. Well, this is the other, when you pose this question to me.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to struggle to think about actual jokes. I mean, I love a sight gag, and I think that animated movies that can do sight gags, great. You're adding to your, you're adding to your jokes per minute ratio, all that good stuff. But I shouldn't have to, having literally watched it less than 24 hours ago, sit here and be like, huh, what is the best joke in Shrek? If it's that good and funny, it should come to me immediately.
You know what joke when I was a child I thought was the funniest joke in the movie, and it did make me laugh, is when there's those toys when they arrive at the kingdom, the Disneyland kingdom, mm-hmm. and they say, shine your shoes, wipe your
face. Great.
And you think they're going to say a bad word?
Yep.
Like that, I mean, that to me as an 8-year-old child, I was like, oh my God. But now as an adult, I'm like, okay, that's not a great joke.
It's a joke for children.
It's a joke for children. And I just don't
think. It's a 5-star joke for children.
It's a great joke for children. And I just think that the animation landscape has so many movies that like have much more nuanced and interesting jokes and things happening that I'm like, why does Shrek get so much attention?
Well, a lot of it, you make a great point too. A lot of it, I think, comes from the timing of it, and yeah. a lot of the very positive reviews of Shrek, because Shrek got almost overwhelmingly critical acclaim. There are a couple instances where, like Nathan Rabin from AV Club was talking about how it feels, it's not as clever or hip as it desperately feels the need to be. It's got a number of touching, funny moments, but it doesn't have the intelligence or wit that some other animated movies do. Right?
And I'll even say it is hip, but hipness doesn't age. Like, it's very hip. It's like it hit at this moment where like the Disney tower was really falling. Like Disney didn't quite figure out what to do with animation. They had sort of stopped making original musicals. They were sort of trying to make more edgier adult comedies, and they were whiffing, on like Treasure Planet, and even like the Emperor's New Groove was a whiff for them, even though I like that
movie
more.
I love Emperor's New Groove. It's such
me
a
shame. Too. I know. But so it felt like they were whiffing, and then DreamWorks stepped up and were like, we can make the edgy movie for kids that they'll want to watch. And they, hit it out of the park. But I think you're looking back and you're like, this was a time before Pixar movies. Like, this was a time before people realized that you could tell like really interesting, more profound stories for children that don't rely on like, oh, I get it, that's from The Matrix, or like, oh, it's like Cinderella, but like weird, but twisted.
Right. It's a kind of movie that it felt more groundbreaking in the time than it actually was.
Yeah. And I think that it gets a lot of like residual goodwill because it was the first animated movie that like wasn't precious, that it was like, whoa, look how like zany it is. But I think that doesn't make it good.
Right. Yeah. I think, I've said this before about movies that seem in the way that Shrek kind of has, where it like sets a bar, and then over the years you watch movie after movie clear that bar.
Yeah.
And then you go back and watch Shrek, and I enjoyed watching Shrek again. And I think the fact that I had to sit here and realize that like the entirety of Shrek basically washed over me as I watched it, and I can't, it's not really, other than, oh, there's a plot and they go on a journey and they do the thing. I can't really remember, like, there's not a lot of standout moments that really feel like they captured me.
Nothing is unexpected in Shrek. Like, I think the only original idea that the movie actually has is that, sometimes you can fall in love with someone even if he's ugly, which like Beauty and the Beast did, but also Beauty and the Beast did in 1816. It's like, that's an old message. And then also like, ogres are like onions.
Yeah.
Which is like an iconic line, but it's not saying much. It's not like having any ideas. And then you compare that with a movie like, The Incredibles, which comes out just a few years later, Finding Nemo, which comes out, a few years later. And you're like, oh, those are movies that do things that are unexpected, that have new ideas. But I'm not just like a Pixar, Disney, you know, like I think How to Train Your Dragon is really unexpected and smart and has ideas. And I just don't think Shrek does. I think Shrek's only idea is like, how can we be twisted? How can we be zany?
Yeah. I think they're even like, you know, some of my favorite movies, animated and otherwise, Coraline, I think, is a really great movie. And Fantastic Mr. Fox is in my top five.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
But those are the kind of movies that, like, they don't feel like they have, for whatever reason, the critical outpouring of love that Shrek does. And that's not to say, like, those movies have obviously come from, like, new studios and different filmmakers. Yeah. And there's good filmmaking in Shrek. Like, that final sequence, the montage where after Shrek has left Princess Fiona with Farquaad.
You mean and doing the Hallelujah song.
I mean, the Hallelujah montage. That's, like, iconic. That's up there. You can't. Yeah. Because it's like, you have the match cuts and you have the music and this wonderful emotional moment. And you're like, they did the thing. They did it right.
Yeah.
But you can be a middle of the road movie as long as you have competent people who understand like how to make movies behind it. Like, you can still pull that off.
I'm so glad that you brought up Coraline, because I think what I love about Coraline is it's funny, but it doesn't like condescend to kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think Coraline, I'm not a parent and I'm, I guess, like a millennial adult, but like, I kind of think the best thing about kids is they don't need things over explained to them and they're weird. And like, kids are kind of dark and like, I love when kids are weird. And like, Coraline has weird kid logic to it.
Yes.
Which I just find so beautiful and charming. And I think that that movie does incredibly successful artistic things while also being an entertaining and genuinely scary movie. So I'm like, yes, those movies exist. So why did Shrek get, you know, I don't know. Why did Shrek get the Palme d'Or?
I mean, what happened to Shrek hadn't really happened in other movies. Like, you know, it was made sort of seemingly reflexively against Disney. You know, there's the whole, at the time, this is, you know, right after Katzenberg had split with the company, and there's all of this moment, you know, this is from Roger Ebert's review, where he says it's jolly and wicked and filled with sly in-jokes. And that's the kind of thing, you know, this is one of the many times that I watch a review from Roger Ebert, or read a review from Roger Ebert, rather, and I'm like, all right, you're picking the low-hanging fruit here.
Right. It is jolly and filled with in jokes. Can I maybe say, I think that Shrek was good for 2001 and just doesn't hold up.
Oh yeah. You can totally say that.
Because I guess, you know, at the time, if you're like, it clearly struck a nerve. I think people were ready to see animation be more subversive and less precious, but it doesn't have staying power. It didn't age well. It's not interesting. It wasn't doing anything creatively fulfilling, even if it was culturally satisfying.
But here's a question that I'm curious if you have an answer for this. Yeah. I certainly don't. So, you know, some of the other movies we talked about that had come out around that time, the one that most comes to mind is Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah, which I genuinely do love.
Genuinely love Emperor's New Groove. And that movie had, it didn't feel precious. It felt like it wasn't being condescending to kids. Like, there's a lot of lasting jokes in there and stuff that works over time.
Yeah.
Why do you think that stuff like that got overlooked and does not have the relevance now that Shrek apparently does? Like, there's no Emperor's New Groove franchise. Shrek has a fucking fighting game based off of it. Kart racing games.
Yeah. That's a really good question. I think that's twofold. It's like the Disney studio was, you know, not knowing what to do at the time. Like, here's a weird thing. I love the movie Treasure Planet. It's a weird movie, but I will defend that movie. Like, I think it took big artistic risks and like created a fun world. And like, so I'm not a contrarian. I like what I like, but I also think that Shrek then launched the second most damaging convention of animated movies was that you need a big named star to be the lead of your movie.
Yeah.
I think that it really helped Shrek that they had Mike Myers and Cameron Diaz and Eddie Murphy, like, standing out and doing promotion and promoting it and merchandising it, like, in a way bigger way, to the degree that nowadays when, like, Trolls comes out, that Justin Timberlake has to be in it or whatever.
Right.
Like, I mean, that it's set up that, like, you need, when an animated movie comes out, you hire a big celebrity so then they can be on a talk show.
Right. I mean, look, and you can see that in the casting of DreamWorks movies especially, and I'm sure Pixar too, but, like, you know, Shark Tale right after this, Will Smith, yeah, Robert De Niro, Renee Zellweger, Angelina Jolie, Martin Scorsese is listed in the cast on that movie.
Where it's like the voice performances in Emperor's New Groove are amazing, but no one's like, oh, I can't wait to see Patrick Warburton on Leno talk about this.
Right. Yeah, we're going to definitely book David Spade to talk about this.
Oh, John Goodman puts in an excellent vocal performance. Eartha Kitt. Wow. Like, yeah, let's have them on, you know, the Hollywood, put their handprints on the Hollywood stars.
So, man, Dana, you
have
turned me.
You? Have I?
Here's the thing. I can't say that Shrek is bad. Like, I can't, but I think we're at the same point. We've come across to this bridge now, which is,
you
Shrek
mean
is good for 2001.
A rickety bridge that's about to fall and collapse.
Yes, and there's a dragon who's going to chase after us and try and burn the bridge down.
Yeah, of course.
And
the dragon character is funny. I'll give Shrek the dragon.
Yeah, dragon's funny. Here's, did you ever have the Shrek DVD to watch a bunch as a kid?
Yeah.
An all-time great DVD.
Yeah. Oh, an all-time DVD. You, no argument for me there.
Well, because my favorite part of the DVD was the deleted sequence at the end where they have everybody singing. It's the extended montage. And then you cut to to the Farquaad in the dragon's stomach singing Staying Alive for like 5 seconds. And then it cuts back out. And I'm like, this is genius.
I absolutely love that. I think I memorized that montage. Best part of the movie. Here's another hot take. I think Shrek 2 might be better than Shrek 1.
Well, Shrek 2 is certainly more memorable.
And I'll also say the DVD of Shrek 2, if you don't recall, had a Ever After, whatever the town is called, American Idol parody. Where,
oh, yeah, that's right. Grant,
Simon, and I definitely Simon Cowell, but you got to, like, play American Idol with all the characters.
That's right. I mean, I'll always remember Shrek 2 for the I Need a Hero version by Jennifer Saunders.
That's a moment that I remember where I'm like, okay, there, this is going for it.
Yeah. Shrek 1 doesn't really have that. Shrek 1, of course, like, yeah, Smash Mouth shows up. And great.
It opens, it implies that Shrek is literally wiping his ass with a book.
Yeah.
And I just think, like, I guess that is edgy and subversive in 2001, you know, in this pre-9/11 world. But I like you said, we're meeting at this bridge of like, all right, maybe it satisfied this cultural itch in 2001.
Oh,
but
my God.
Overall,
it didn't even occur to me that this is pre-9/11. May 18th.
Oh.
Do you, man, I wonder if this had come out after 9/11, if people would have loved it so much.
No,
if this
we
had come out
we
like October.
I guarantee if it had come out October, we wanted everything to be earnest.
Oh my God. Maybe that's part of why people were able to like love this. And this, I mean, this won Best Animated Feature, the next Oscar ceremony.
The Wind Rises lost Best Animated Feature. It's bullshit.
No, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of bullshit Best Animated Feature picks. I'm with you there.
Maybe it was just everyone's last good memory before 9/11.
Maybe.
Like children, you know, like I was, you know, in third grade when this happened, and it was just like, oh, this was the last moment of my childhood that felt pure.
Yeah.
And I feel so like that's why there's a lot of Shrek nostalgia among my generation.
There's a lot of Shrek nostalgia. Shrek is really, yeah, that is one of the last good moments I have that I can remember is like seeing Shrek in a theater that summer.
Yeah.
When I was 10. Oh, only I knew.
I know all these. It's a generation of millennials who saw Shrek and were happy, and then watched a bunch of people get murdered live on television, and it ruined us forever.
Right, and nobody knew how to talk about it then, but also nobody knew how to really talk about Shrek then either. And so we're stuck with this nostalgia.
Yeah, and we make dumb memes.
So many dumb memes. That's the thing now is like, we'd have to do a whole other episode on the memification of
Shrek. On 9/11.
And 9/11. Oh, yeah. But somehow Shrek really has lasted, and like it's become, yeah. I didn't even know this until prepping for the show today, but Shrek was selected for preservation in the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress.
I mean, every movie gets preserved in the main rooms. Like, I mean, in the House of Congress. That's like not a fancy thing.
No, in the registry. This is separate. There's a whole, like, it's a thing. Like, there's the National Film Registry.
I did not know that. I guess it does have, and I can't argue with, I was reading as you were talking, so if I was a little distracted, I was like, oh, what is that? I mean, it does have a cultural impact. I cannot argue with that. That is factually true.
But is the cultural impact good? I mean, I think your thesis is correct in that it's not, like, it's definitely set animated filmmaking back. It made yes. people reach for something lower instead of being able to be like, oh, well, this is a truly great
yeah.
film that also you happens to be animated.
You articulated exactly. It made people reach for something lower because Shrek hit at this, you know, mark and did so well and made like $1 billion and 3 sequels. And so now every other movie is like, oh, we just have to, you know, turn out a shitty movie and hire a big Hollywood star and reference a current event. And then we're at gold. So it like, it lowered the standard of what was considered acceptable for movies.
There is some info about the future of Shrek that I want to get your take on. So there is a reboot potentially happening.
Why do you need to reboot an animated movie?
Well, we got to reboot everything now.
Okay. Yeah. There's, say more. Sorry.
There's the guy, the mastermind behind Despicable Me has been tasked to reboot the Shrek and Puss in Boots franchise.
There's a Puss in Boots franchise?
It's a spinoff of Shrek. It's got the whole, I think they have an animated series and there's the movie that was released in 2001. Yeah, television spinoff on Netflix.
I've been totally unaware of all this.
Oh, yeah. Antonio Banderas, Salma Hayek, Zach Galifianakis, Billy Bob Thornton, Amy Sedaris is in it.
Wow, what a cast.
Directed by Chris Miller.
I mean, great. Good.
Oh, not Lord Miller, Chris Miller. Different guy.
Oh, different Miller. That's like when there was a Coen brother who Bill Murray thought was directing Garfield, and that's why he did it, but it was a different
Joel Coen. Oh, yeah. Different Coen.
Oh.
Oh, my God. Well, this is the crazy thing. So I don't know where you stand. I haven't really seen the most I've seen of Despicable Me is probably like standing in line for something at Universal Studios. If they showed clips of it, it's obviously become about as memeable as Shrek, thanks to the Minions. But I don't know. I don't think we need a reboot of Shrek from that standpoint. We don't need that cash grab.
I mean, it would be interesting to see a reboot of Shrek if it tried to be really like creatively risky and like really tried to do something. That'd be kind of fun. But like, I feel like Shrek is so firmly in the zeitgeist that how would you do a reboot when people already are just watching Shrek still?
I don't know. What would you think if you got tasked to reboot Shrek?
Yeah.
What's your variation? How do you flip it to make it feel relevant?
I mean, you take this fairy tale world that's established. Shrek is like an old man in this, and his, you know, Fiona's dead. He's like, he has to be back to being a curmudgeon, right? He can't be okay. Like likable again. He's an old curmudgeon, and it's sort of like a young ogre comes to him And Shrek has to learn that he can't pull up the ladder behind him. Like, now life is really easy for ogres. And, like, oh, everyone likes ogres. And that, and Shrek's kind of resentful of it because of, like, he had a lot of trouble. And so he has to kind of learn not to be a ladder puller and, like, to accept that, like, progress happens. And just because you struggle, you can't judge those who come after you.
There you go. And then you get Liam Neeson to do the voice of old Shrek.
Yeah. Liam Neeson is old Shrek and Timothy Chalamet is young Shrek.
There you go. Sold. Yep. Print it. Anybody from DreamWorks listening, get Dana on the phone. The other question I have, and I think, you know, we've sort of talked about this a little bit, but DreamWorks is known for, in the wake of Shrek, in the giant slimy wake of Shrek, that he rifted through the swamp of DreamWorks films. Yep. There's only really one standout that people have looked at, and that's How to Train Your Dragon. And, you know, as somebody who hasn't seen How to Train Your Dragon, who's heard nothing but great things about it, why should that be the high watermark now that people look at in terms of what people can aspire to filmmaking-wise, animated-wise, all that good stuff-wise?
How to Train Your Dragon is genuinely maybe one of my top 10 animated movies. I don't know of all time, but, like, possibly. I haven't made that list, but, like, it's unexpected, it's simple, it's beautiful, and it has some of, like, the best music and most beautifully animated scenes in any, like the praise that's been given to WALL-E, I feel like, for the scenes of, like, WALL-E, you know, just flying through space, should also be given to the scenes of the flying and How to Train Your Dragon with the score. I also cry every single time I watch How to Train Your Dragon, and it's multiple times.
I gotta watch this movie.
The first one. I mean, sequels are sequels, but, like, the first one really hits it of what you want in an animated movie, which is, like, it has heart, it's funny, but it then, you know, makes you feel in an unexpected way.
And I'm guessing it probably doesn't do that while also making a bunch of pop culture references.
I think almost no pop culture references. It takes place in, like, a, you know, I think the comparison to Shrek feels apt because they're both in, like, you know, sort of magical worlds, but it's a world that actually feels not real, but, like, lived in, as opposed to, like, a world that just is, you know, only exists for the point of visual gags.
Mm-hmm. You know, now that you really, you got me thinking, I think maybe what Shrek was able to capture was people wanted to see somebody give the middle finger to Disney.
Yeah.
And that's really it. Like, if you look at some of the other stuff that has won, especially from not just a critical standpoint, from an award standpoint, the other stuff that has won Best Animated Feature, it is largely movies that are earnest and are not just, like, winking and, like, ah, look at how fucking cool and clever we are, you know?
Yeah.
Your Spirited Aways, your Finding Nemo's, The Incredibles.
This was also, it was the first, and like, when they had nominations for animated movies. And, like, the other nomination is Jimmy Neutron Boy Genius. So, yeah. Like, they didn't know what to do with that category yet.
And I think, yeah, Monsters, Inc., I would have picked that as the winner that year. But everybody's like, Shrek, yes.
Yeah.
Give it to Shrek. Give it to our green child. Yeah. But even now, like, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, you know, that's going to go down not just in the canon of, like, all-time great animated movies, but I think in all-time great movies.
I think now I'm looking at the winners for Best Animated Feature, and it almost always gets it wrong. I mean, Monster House was way better than Happy Feet. Coraline and Fantastic Mr. Fox are way better than Up.
Yeah, I love Fantastic Mr. Fox so much. And
I think How to Train Your Dragon is better than Toy Story 3. Toy Story 3 is my least favorite of the quadrilogy.
Interesting. Wait, what's your favorite?
The second.
Okay, second one's
really, I think
really
it
good.
Goes second, first, fourth, third. What's your ranking?
I would say, God, I mean, I like 3 a lot. It might go 3, 2, 1, 4.
Three is your favorite.
It might be. I think 3 is my favorite because, again, I haven't seen the Toy Stories in a while, but like three lingered with me in a way that, and I think it's because I was watching it as an adult for the first time. I haven't seen the other two Toy Stories as a kid or since I was a kid. I'm sure if I watched them now, I would probably appreciate some of the sequences and the storytelling more. But like I was in New York that summer, and I was like, I saw a matinee, and I was like clearly the only adult who was unaccompanied with a child. And I was just sitting there like softly crying to myself.
He was heaving with tears watching that in the theater.
Yeah, it is what it is.
I'm going to go on the record and say it's absolute bullshit that that Moana lost to Zootopia. I think Moana is way better.
What year was that? That was 2016.
Yeah.
See, I didn't even see any of the movies that were nominated that year.
What were you doing?
I don't know what I was doing in 2016. I don't think I was watching a whole lot of movies that year at all.
Paranorman is better than Brave.
Yeah, I didn't. 2016 was a year that like I kind of checked out of movies, I think. 2015.
Wolfwalkers was better than Soul on the record.
I have heard Wolfwalkers is great. This is another one. I haven't watched any of the movies from this past year.
We've been locked inside. What are you doing?
I'm watching other bad movies. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'll make some rectifications, and I got Apple TV Plus. I'll watch Wolfwalkers.
Ooh.
It's on my list.
I'm a brag.
Somebody's got to watch Ted Lasso. Okay, we gotta keep up with it. Well, I have some catching up to do on the animated feature standpoint, and you've sparked my joy. You got me wanting to do more of that. So thank you for that, and thank you for helping me get the rose tint out of my glasses on Shrek, Dana.
I'm here to help. Well, I hope I'll run into you in the neighborhood.
I hope you will on our long drives around East LA.
Yeah, we'll meet maybe halfway on the freeway.
Yeah, maybe we can wink at each other on the 110 or the 5 sometime.
Yeah.
You've got some cool stuff coming out. You got social media people should follow. Plug your things. Where can they follow you? Where can they find you? What should they check out of yours?
Follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Dana Schwartz with 3 Z's. I have a podcast called Noble Blood where I am not a snob about animated movies. It's a history podcast where I talk about royals and nobles throughout history and weird things that happened to them. I have a book coming out called Anatomy, a Love Story, that you should pre-order wherever books are sold. And then you should just go on my Twitter and say nice things to me because I'm very insecure all the time.
Great. Do all that stuff. You can find me at Diet J on Twitter and Instagram, jlightcomedy.com for show dates, both live and live streamed. If you like the podcast, tell a friend. Consider subscribing to the Patreon. You get bonus episodes, access to my film library, all that good stuff. Dana, thanks again.
Thanks so much. All right, stop and record.
This has been Blockbusting. Go see something good for a change. We did it.